One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila, and we're back. I'm an author, speaker, and psychologist, and every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature. We have exciting guests on the show to help you improve your life in many ways, and we talk about many different topics to elevate your life, in your relationships, your finances, career, and health. And I'm very excited today. We have a wonderful guest who actually was on the show before, Michelle Tillis Letterman, who's an accomplished speaker, trainer, coach, and author of 4 books, actually maybe 5, including the 11 Laws of Likeability. She's been named by Forbes as one of the top 25 professional networking experts, a former professor, financial executive, and recovering CPA. She's been on CBS, MSNBC, New York Times, Forbes, Working Mother Magazine. And last time we talked about likability, and today she's here to talk about her new book, which is called The Connector's Advantage, 7 Mindsets to Grow Your Influence and Impact. Welcome, Michelle, to the show.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you on. And I do want to thank you. You gave a nice endorsement for my book, Invincible You, last time. So you definitely connected with me, and I'm going to connect back with you.
Well, once you're in my life, it's hard to get rid of me.
Well, there you go. That's perfect. So the whole idea about being a connector, and what I gathered from your book is someone who's relationship-focused, trusted, and who gets results with ease. So tell us a little bit about what does that mean to be a connector?
Well, I actually think you made the most important distinction, which is that a connector is relationship-focused in their approach to business, to life, and to work, to everything.
Yes.
And when we think about a connector, I always want to ensure people understand that it's a spectrum. It's not you're a connector or you're not a connector. You're somewhere along the spectrum between those, the non-connecting and the super global connecting.
Yes.
And when you are a connector, whatever it is that you're working on or working towards, you're going to get that result faster, easier, and better when you're a connector. And that's what I talk about. That's what the advantage is.
I see. Because you talk about, I think you said, making the world smaller, I guess, through technology or in terms of communities. And that's an exciting idea. Now, one thing is, I'll tell you, Michelle, and I know you talk about it in your book, the idea of the internal energy person. I'm actually an only child myself. I'm internal energy. I love people, but I need to have my own private time. And I get kind of tired with a lot of social interactions. So how about people like us, people that are more what we call introverted or internal energy folks? What's the best way for us to get out there and connect?
You actually have natural gifts towards connection that I don't think introverts always recognize in themselves. And that's actually really important for me to highlight. I even extroverts like me get drained doing all of this. So I know people are like, really? I get energy from other people and I'm externally energized,
right?
But yet we get tired too. And I think it's really important to understand your tendencies towards connection. Introverts, I always say the introverts have an edge. They are natural in the one-on-one, right? That's their comfort zone. And that's where real connection forms.
Yes.
So I don't feel that an introvert needs to be the life of the party or needs to be working the crowd. They just need to be in a one-on-one conversation to enable connection because they're excellent listeners, another advantage. Put people at ease, which is interesting because a lot of extroverts will say they might feel uncomfortable with introverts because they're not expressive. But I think an introvert that is listening and asking probative questions and they're not overpowering and they're not off-putting can really enable that connection. And so I think you bring a lot of strength to the table and don't need to worry about it looking the way it does for other people.
Yes. Now, you did mention, I think, that your husband is also an introvert. And, in relationship studies, it can be a little bit of a challenge, the extrovert female with an introvert male. So you really have to respect each other's differences. How do you guys make that work, the differences in your styles?
It works so well. And it's interesting. They always talk about opposites attracting.
Yes.
And I think it's true when it comes to communication styles, just not when it comes to values and interests.
Yes.
And it's something that I've been telling my kids, because my husband and I like to do a lot of the same things and we have very shared values. But boy, could we not be more different in the way in which we approach organization and planning and,
exactly.
and parties.
Exactly.
But you know, it's very interesting because he went to business school about 7 years after I did. And when we were in social situations, he often would rely on me to break into conversations and to kind of keep that conversation going. But when I was his wife and he was the person in school, I became a bit of a mute. Oh. And he was kind of confused, like, what's going on here? I said, yeah, I've done this already. if you want me to know somebody, these are your friends, yes. you need to introduce me. Ah. And so I think one of the things when you are dealing with a coworker or a significant other or a friend where you have opposite styles, it's to understand to not let your style overpower if you're the extrovert, and to not over rely on the other person if you're an introvert. You guys need to share that responsibility, and that's why it works so well for us.
Exactly. You know, when I wrote the book Love Types, we do talk about the different personality dimensions, you know, the thinker versus feeler, structure, spontaneous, mm-hmm. and introvert, extrovert is another important one. And many times we think the other people are like us. So if we're introverted, we think others are like that or vice versa. So it is important to, I guess, have a little bit of empathy and, you know, realize where they're coming from and kind of like understand their style. Now, Michelle, you do talk about the advantages of being a connector. And you talk about in terms of jobs that people refer each other jobs, better job satisfaction. And also one that I find very interesting is mental health and loneliness. Now, one of our missions here at Love University is actually to help eradicate loneliness around the world through our community. And I think you might have a similar mindset because you talk about that loneliness can actually increase or decrease the mortality rate. People die younger when they're lonely.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was stunned when I came across this research out of Brigham Young University where it said that social isolation and loneliness can have a greater impact on mortality than obesity and an equivalent impact on your mortality as smoking 15 cigarettes a day for 10 years.
That's incredible.
You know, so it's not just about our results. It is about our health. It is about our happiness. And you alluded to another statistic. I love statistics, and there's tons in there to support why and how this advantage happens with all of those things we've been talking about. Mm. But I think the two that you brought up are so key. People who have strong work relationships actually feel more job satisfaction, and it's a predictor of their happiness on the job and with the job.
Yes, definitely. I think you said increases satisfaction by 50%, which that's a huge number. At work.
It is huge, yes.
And then the idea of the immune system and cortisol, stress hormones that are also involved in people that are overstressed. And, you know, the idea of being connected can lower that.
There was tons of more research about all those different chemicals in the brain. And I can't pronounce half of them, so I don't try to share that I know them that well. But they're in the book and they're sourced.
yes, perfect. Well, by the way, I want to commend you. Your book is very well written. I mean, it's also very accessible. People can really understand it and kind of apply the principles. So I think it's very valuable. And the other thing, that's the goal. Yeah, definitely.
Now, one of the things I did in writing the book, and one of my purposes behind the book, which I think really aligns with your thinking as well, is to make it accessible. I originally called this the Connectors Club, and I realized it's not a club. Anybody can join. Anybody can infuse these mindsets and behaviors into their interactions and get that advantage. So, yeah, I really do want it to be something that is implementable. So throughout the book, we give mindset missions so that people can take the ideas and put them into their own actions.
Right. I even thought of maybe creating an anti-loneliness day, or maybe we can create a connectors day where everyone connects.
Oh, I love it.
You know, like you'll say you call someone you haven't talked to in a long time, you know, kind of like remembering who they are and connecting with them. So that would be kind of cool to create something. And the other thing you talk about is even companies. You say there's a 5 to 10 higher valuation in companies that build relationships. And you talk about Netflix, LinkedIn, and a few other companies. And I was reading somewhere that even Starbucks, they actually teach their employees emotional intelligence in dealing with customers as a way to, you know, build a connection. Why is that so important for companies?
You'll see a big difference in the valuations between relationship and membership-based organizations versus transactional organizations. There's a real shift in understanding what the value is. And consumers, we are more educated, we're smarter, we have access to more, and so we can be more selective. And there is a loyalty built. You know, for example, when I was just decorating my house, when I bought my house and I was going to the mall a lot, I would go to the same store and they knew my name and they knew my colors and they knew what room I was working on.
Yes.
And it became sticky. And so that's what they talk about is, you know, are you kind of sticky, or are you handcuffing people with like big contracts? Netflix doesn't have, you can terminate any time, but yet people don't. Mm. And it's because they start to learn their customer preferences and they build relationship. And that's why the membership economy, the membership type of businesses and subscription businesses have grown over 200% since 2011.
That's amazing. Now, the term sticky is kind of interesting. What do you mean by that exactly?
sticky relationships are those where it becomes easier and enjoyable. So it is a loyalty, and it's I'm coming because I want to, not because I have to. I'm coming because, hey, you recommended this song for me or this program for me. Wow. You get to, you know me, you see the things I like, and I feel like it is personalized. Yes. And that personalization goes a long way.
I see what you're saying. Now, the other thing I thought about is I talk to parents that have children, and they say sometimes the children hate school because they don't have friends. And I remember when I was a kid, you know, as an only child, I used to love books, and I loved school regardless. But I think there might be an interesting idea that about schools, you know, whether connections are important for kids. It kind of reminds me of a story that there's this son talking to a dad, and he said, "Dad, I hate school. I'll tell you three reasons why. Number one, it's boring. Number two, no one likes me. Number three, I just hate school." And the dad said to the son, "Son, I'll give you three reasons why you are going to school. Number one, it's your duty. Number two, you're 45 years old. And number three, you're the teacher." I used to teach, so I know about that. But what do you think about that, Michelle? The idea at school, is that important for kids to have friends in school, to do well in school?
I think it does make a large difference. When you are working with others and when you have connection, when you are liked, your ideas are received and I guess made more robust. So what happens is when you have that connection, people view you as more trustworthy. Your ideas are more credible. Mm-hmm. And then they are morphed because people will brainstorm and collaborate and bounce off those ideas. And so the ideas get even better. And so if you were in isolation in school, you don't have that feedback. You don't have that collaboration. You don't have that idea exchange.
Right.
And so there's the intellectual portion that might be missing. But there's also, it's so important. I mean, my kids are in middle school right now, which is probably like the toughest of all schools. I mean, it's like right in that time when everybody's kind of doing all that changing and it's a very difficult time. And at the beginning of last school year, he was still in fifth grade and everyone put notes about, you know, how they felt about school. And my son wrote, "I feel alone." And it breaks your heart because he would say that he would spend recess walking by himself. That doesn't feel good to anybody. And the idea is not to have to be like anybody else, but to find people that you can connect with. And I remind my kids and I remind everybody out there listening that we don't have to be like the people that we like. We just have to find something likable about the people that we want to connect with.
Interesting.
And you don't have to like everything about them, but finding that point of common interest, which is now Dungeons and Dragons, apparently.
Yeah, you
know, you've got a great group.
Yeah, there's a study that talks about overcoming the odds. Kids that come from very impoverished or abusive backgrounds, and you know, some of them make it to a very high level in life. And one of the factors is what you talked about, likability, having kind of a charismatic or a likable personality, a good sense of humor. It actually makes a big difference for resilience. You know, overcoming obstacles. It's kind of like a buffer in many ways for kids that come from difficult backgrounds.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody needs to find their own form of resilience. Sometimes it's humor, sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's even academics.
Yeah, some talent that they have, some attribute that helps them, cope with things and also stick out in a way, in a positive way.
Exactly.
Now, Michelle, in terms of the common mistakes when you try to connect, and I can think of two offhand. I guess someone who is maybe more internal energy that says, I don't really want to get out there and get involved, it's too much trouble. And they don't make the effort. The other people are like over eager and even chase other people. So how do you avoid those two extremes? Because sometimes you can get to the mindset, I want to get this contact and you try too hard and it might be off-putting. Where do you find that balance?
So I don't really believe in targeting. And that's that extroverted energy that's chasing somebody down. I say, stay in somebody's mind, but don't get in their face. Look for ways to be in the environment that they might already be in. So, for example, Marshall Goldsmith, who contributed to the book, and he actually put a quote right on the cover.
Yes.
I had connected through a mutual friend. So we had an association, which built some trust. And then we had some email exchange. And then we chatted, and then he let me interview him. And then I went to an event where he was live. And so looking for those places to continue creating connection, but not always asking and thinking about adding value. And so it's not a one-directional relationship. When we chase somebody, it's always because we want something.
Right.
And so we need to understand how we are adding value to the relationships that we're trying to build and create. So I'm a little against the strategic approach, but I don't mind you thinking about, well, where are they speaking? Let me go there. Let me reach out to them on LinkedIn in advance and let them know that I'll be there. My husband did this recently.
Yes.
He works in the hospitality industry, and he went to a conference where the head of Wyndham was going to be speaking. And he sent a note to him on LinkedIn saying, I hope we get a chance to meet. I'll be at the conference. And apparently, the guy didn't respond. My husband's reach out on LinkedIn, didn't accept his invitation, but yet was asking people who he was because he wanted to meet him. And so then they ended up connecting at the conference.
Right.
So there are things that you can do to make it feel less like I'm chasing you and more like I'm seeking to connect with you. On the flip side with the introvert, this is where I say that we need to stretch ourselves. But also think about the fact that you're always networking. It doesn't matter where you are always in the opportunity to network. I have made friends at the playground, on school trips, at the dog park, at the nail salon. Like, I meet people everywhere, right? So think about where you already are and connect with the people in the environments where you are comfortable. And then just every once in a while, stretch yourself into those environments where you might not be as comfortable.
That's really great. So I like that. So stretching yourself, if you're an introvert, and I think you said like being part of an environment where you can actually, I guess, connect with people in kind of a subtle way, where you build a relationship, I think is what you're saying. So that's really powerful. Now, in terms of the connector, now you do have a lot of your book actually talks about the traits of the connector. And these are very interesting kind of traits. Some of these remind me of like Maslow's self-actualization pyramid kind of thing, where people that, reach a higher level have some of these positive traits. So one of them, I think, is you said open and authentic and accepting. So to yourself and to others. Tell us a little bit about that. How does that work for a connector, being open, accepting, and authentic?
So let me just give your listeners an overview of the seven mindsets, and then we'll dive into the open and accepting.
Great.
So open and accepting is the first one. And these mindsets are not, they're written in an order for a reason. That said, they are not linear. It's not like I have to do one to do the next. Uh-huh. It's to understand where you fall within each of them and recognize that they enable each other. That sometimes it's hard to get to one if you don't have another. But open and accepting, connectors have a clear vision. Connectors believe in abundance. They trust. They are social and curious. They are conscientious. And they have a generous spirit. So those are the seven mindsets. And I do believe that it starts with open and accepting. And when we talk about open and accepting, it is not just of others, but also of ourselves. So as you were saying, you're an introvert and I'm an extrovert. And those come with great strengths, but they also come with great drawbacks as well.
Yes. Challenges, you could say.
Now,
One of the things you say, Michelle, is accept yourself. Stop apologizing. There are people that are very apologetic. I'm sorry, I don't have enough time. And I'm sorry for this and that. And that could be a negative, but in relationships, some studies show that it is good to apologize, to kind of like clear the air. Where do you fall on that? Should we be apologetic at times in relationships, like intimate relationships or in general?
If you have done something wrong, absolutely. The challenge is when you haven't done something wrong and you're constantly apologizing when you haven't done something wrong, that people start to believe that you've done something wrong. Ah. It also starts to put you in a perception of weakness or perception of insecurity. And so you start to create an image of you that you might not be creating or wanting to create. So don't overly apologize. And if you are going to apologize, use the word "my apologies" or, I would love to offer my apologies instead of "I'm sorry." Because "I'm sorry" just feels a little bit weaker, whereas offering apologies is a little bit more actionable.
Yeah, more strong. And you said accept the multiple aspects of yourself. And, we do have different sides to ourselves. Introverts can be extrovert at times. Extroverts can be introvert, et cetera. So that's an interesting concept to really, kind of like revere who we are, our talents and our abilities. And people may not do that. They may discount themselves. Do you find that to be the case in your work?
Oh, God, yes. I think different research showed different percentages, but it was between 77 and 90% of our self-talk is negative. In other words, we are not very nice to ourselves.
That's true. So for self-forgiveness, and I talk about in my book, The Three Secrets of Happiness, forgiveness is, of self is one of the key elements of happiness. And sometimes it's hard for people to do. And you also say, as part of this, when you say, catch yourself in confident moments, like find out, when you've been successful, write it down and recreate it. So why is that so important to catch yourself in confident moments?
Sometimes we don't give ourselves the credit that we need, but when you catch yourself in confident moments, it's easier to access the feelings again and to justify the feelings because you can give yourself that pat on the back saying, you know, yeah, I did that, or yeah, and it just, you start to feel it in your body. And so when you start to feel it in your body, it actually impacts your brain and it becomes self-fulfilling. So I think catching yourself in confidence and making sure that you have ways to remind yourself of your successes, whether it's, I talk about success files. And I encourage everybody out there listening to create a success file. And that's that email folder or physical folder of all the things that have gone well. They don't have to be big. It could be somebody said, hey, great job on that presentation. Or, oh, I love that idea you gave today. Just jotting those great little things down, or even asking them to say, oh, hey, they, can you send that to me in an email? I would love to share that with my boss, or something like that. And so at the end of the year or at down times, you have that place to go to remind yourself of all the good that's happened.
I like that. Yeah, that's kind of a re-imprinting in your brain success stories that you've had. Now, you also talk about something called flexing. Now, I mean, I do a little bit of body work and lifting weights and all. So flexing muscles is one thing, but you talk about, I think, pulling back on certain traits. And you mentioned that you are kind of a talker. So the idea of over-talking, sometimes you can pull back and be a little more silent. When is that important to flex, as you say?
Not all the time. And yes, I one of my unique charms is that I can talk a lot, as your listeners can probably hear.
It's hard for you to be silent then, Michelle. Like if I were to say, Michelle, sit there for 30 seconds quietly. Can you do that? Or is that a little difficult?
I can, but I wouldn't want to do it on a podcast.
Well, of course, yeah, it'd be a little boring, but but in general, I think, why is it important to, like you say, flex in a sense?
So flexing is the temporary or momentary adjustment of your style of a trait to improve communication and effectiveness in an exchange with somebody else, right? So if I am meeting you live, we've never met before, I might not go over the top talking and be really animated and get in your – it's too much. So the idea of flexing is to listen with your eyes and with your ears, to pick up on the cues somebody else is giving you, to understand if what you're bringing to the table is working or not working for the other person. So upon first meeting somebody is a good time to flex. If somebody's really stressed out or highly emotional, good time for you to flex to them. When you want to collaborate or even grow somebody, if you're a manager and you want to develop somebody else, flex to them. So there's time that it's worth when you're trying to influence, flex to them. But most of the time, it's great to be who you are and to bring your whole self.
I can see that. I'm a naturally enthusiastic person, and sometimes I can seem a little bit overly enthusiastic to some other people. And the idea of matching and mirroring, is a therapeutic technique. And that might be a little bit what you're saying, where you kind of cater to the person's emotional energy to a certain extent. But then, you're yourself at the same time. So you can maybe match and lead them at certain situations when that goes that way. Now, the other thing is, Michelle, you talk about a clear vision, knowing what you want, asking for it. And you have different kind of ways to ask for things. Why is it difficult for people to ask for what they want?
Well, people are afraid of rejection is usually the most common response I get when I bring that question up for people. They're also afraid of feeling pushy. And sometimes they don't know what they want. And that's why this is such an important mindset. Connectors know what they want and they are willing to ask for it. And it's both parts, because without this mindset, you will not get the advantage. I have people who tell me all the time, I'm a connector and I connect people to things, but nobody gives back to me. And I'll say, well, what have you asked for? What are you working on? And they're like, oh, well, nothing right now. Okay, well then, how are we supposed to give back? How are we supposed to add value when you don't even know what's valuable to you?
Exactly. It's going to the finish line, right? Closing the deal, as they call it. But you also have different ways to ask. One of them is called the opt-out, where you say, make it easier for them to say no. But I'm thinking in sales, I always thought that you did what's called the assumptive close, where you assume the sale. For example, you want to meet on Tuesday or Thursday, which is better, assuming they want to meet. Which is a better way to approach? Should you make it easier for them to say no, or should you assume that they'll say yes?
It depends on the situation. And there are some times where we are going to give the presumptive yes, and it is an option of making it convenient, but it's happening.
Yes.
Versus when we are building a connection, and this is not a sale, sometimes if we make it as easy for them to say no as it is to say yes, then they don't want to avoid us. If you think about that pushy salesman, you don't want to answer the phone. You don't want to meet with them because you know you're going to get the hard sell.
Uh-huh.
But if you know that they're going to be a resource for you and they're going to answer your questions and they're not going to push you too hard and they're going to give you the time and space, then you're not going to avoid them. And so sometimes a no now will get you a yes later.
That's an interesting point. Now, say, Michelle, you want to sell me a widget. So what will be an opt-out question for me? Let's say you want me to kind of buy it, but I can say no if I want to.
So, okay, so a widget. I'm not so good on widgets, but let's try.
Okay, so sell me a self-improvement course that can change my life, but give me an opt-out. How would that go?
Anything like that, I would say, you know, if this is a fit for you, or if this is right at this time for you.
Well, so I'll give them some. I'm too busy today, and I don't have the money, so I don't want it.
Then you know what? Then I would say, then you shouldn't do it.
Because if you don't
really invest in yourself, you're not going to reap that reward. When you are ready, we are here and we will get you from here to there, right? So it's being supportive. It's not saying this isn't good. This is saying that you can't take advantage of how good this is until you're in the right mindset to do it.
I like that. So a master salesperson can actually gauge the person's emotional state or mental state and kind of like gear their pitch to them based on that.
But even like, I don't think everything is a sale. And so it could even just be like, hey, let's get together for coffee. And I get a lot of requests of people saying, let's get together for coffee. I can't meet with all these people having coffee. I don't even drink coffee. So I'm not going to say yes to all of them. But what I will do instead is say, you know, if I'm inviting somebody, I might say, you know, would love to meet live, but if the calendar is too crazy, let's meet on Skype or do a phone call, or, you know, hey, 30 minutes is, you know, hard to find the calendar, let's do 15.
Right.
So it's giving them options.
Yeah, I like that. And I think you also talk about the shrinking ask, which is that you start with a little higher and then go lower. And psychology, that's called face in the door, where they say, you know, not only $299, but if you get it, you know, it's going to be $99. You know, so they keep going down. Why is that an effective way to do it?
So what you're actually reminding me of is some influencing techniques,
yes.
Which is foot in the door or door in the face.
Yes, door in the face,
and
exactly.
Door in the face is where you ask for the sun and the moon and the stars, and then you seem really reasonable when you come down.
Exactly.
And you probably get more than you wanted in the first place. Uh-huh. That said, they might not think about you as reasonable in the long term.
Uh-huh.
So we always have to think about that long-term play.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas foot in the door plays on momentum. We might come in and say, you know, let me do an introductory thing for you, or let me, you know, I want to build trust. I'm going to do this thing at this low, low, low introductory rate.
Exactly.
And then you build up the momentum and the relationship and the proof and the building of trust.
Yes.
That enables somebody to say, hey, we're already going. Let's take the next step. Let's take the next step. Let's keep this rolling.
Yes, when you get the free estimates or, you know, complimentary this and that, you know, then people, you know, they may like the product, so they keep, you know, keep using it.
Well, I think there's a difference between complimentary and introductory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not a sales, you know, guru by any means of the imagination. Mm-hmm. That's not my specialty. But when we are thinking about those things, I think getting somebody to pay even a small amount establishes a different way of thinking about you in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I do, like, for example, with nonprofits, I will give them a reduced rate on speaking if there's room in my calendar. But then on the invoice, I will show them the full rate and I will show them their discount.
I see. So do you prefer the foot in the door, slower long-term approach, Michelle, or the door in the face? Or does it depend on the situation?
I think everything is always situational. I think both can be effective. I think you just need to understand that sometimes you might be cutting yourself a little bit short and giving more than you intended when you're doing the foot in the door.
Uh-huh.
And you might risk them viewing you as unreasonable when you do door in the face. So there's pros and cons to both sides.
I see. That's really fascinating. And then we get into another one called abundance. And, you know, we've heard about the abundance mentality versus poverty mentality. And I write about that in my book, Invincible You, that, you know, money can be considered loving energy in some ways because you do something you love and people give you what we call money back. But sometimes people do have envy toward others. You know, there's what we call upward comparison, where you compare yourself to someone that's doing better. So how do people get rid of that in themselves, the idea of envying other people that are more successful?
I don't think you lose envy just because you come from a place of abundance. When we talk about abundance, and I talk about abundance versus scarcity, and it isn't necessarily financial scarcity. It could be any type of scarcity. For me, when I was in finance, it was scarcity of female partners. It was scarcity of females being promoted. So, you know, scarcity can be a lot of different things.
Right.
And An abundant mindset believes that there is enough for all. An abundant mindset believes that just because it is way right now doesn't mean it always has to be that way.
How's it possible to think abundantly and still have envy? Aren't those opposing forces, or do you think you can have both?
So it's, you know, envy and jealousy are natural emotions. And just because you come from a place of abundance doesn't mean you don't have those moments of, oh, man, you know, I've had them too. You know, I've got colleagues and they would land this amazing client and I would have that moment of like, oh, God, I wish I got that client. And the idea is not to say that you're not going to feel that, but to then say, okay, I felt that, but you know what? Let me put that away and let me focus on the fact that I'm happy for them that they got the client. Maybe I can learn something from them. Maybe I can learn how they got that client. Maybe I'll get that client or that type of client down the road. Or you know what? Hey, I've got other great clients.
Definitely.
And so it's just kind of putting some things into perspective.
Yeah. And also in the East, we talk about the reversal of fortune, which is, you know, be happy for other successes because that may come back to you in a positive way as well. So the idea that, you know, there is an overabundance of resources in the world. Not just money, like you said, but, you know, it could be love, it could be opportunities and things like that. And the other thing is, now here's one that's interesting, Michelle. You talk about trust. And, yeah, I'm a pretty trusting person, and maybe you are. But, you know, there's the idea that, you know, sometimes people take advantage of the trust. You know, there are people out there that will, you know, maybe try to use that in a certain way. So what do we do about that? How do we keep away from the sharks in the world if you're a trusting person?
So I think being a trusting person isn't being a naive person.
Yeah.
I think that we are all selective in how we trust and who we trust and what we trust them about. I think trust is situational. So I always say, I trust my dog to bark if somebody tries to break into my house and protect me. I do not trust my dog if I leave my sandwich alone on the table.
Actually, my dog immediately jumps on people and gives them licks and kisses. It's a retriever. So that's a whole
right? thing. So it's situational. Your dog might, you know, be really great and not eat your food. So we might trust somebody to tell us if this person we're dating is a good person for us, but not trust them to give us good work advice or a good outfit advice or whatever it might be. So we trust people for different things. So the idea is not to just blanketly trust and not have caution in our relationships, but it's to maybe give the benefit of the doubt. It's to give trust to get trust. It's to tend towards the possibility of trust.
Okay, I like that. So situational and also depending on the person as well, depending on the levels of trust. You're talking about that. Now, the other thing is, Michelle, is you talk about being social, I guess curious, you know, being open to meeting people and all that. This is where I really like the idea of the introvert. You have some really good material on introvert styles. And you talk about aligning your energy before you go. Like maybe an introvert needs to get there early, or maybe they say, oh, I'm just going to go for an hour and then, you know, and see how the energy goes, because sometimes it's hard for them to get out of the house because they don't want to expend the energy. So what can we tell about introvert? What kind of tips can we give them to find their own, I guess you call it their format? Is that the way you say it?
I talk about finding your format. And I actually have a whole blog post on all the different things that introverts might do really? In approaching these events, whether it's come early or stay late or volunteer for a position. And it's really funny because it's not just the introverts. I went to an event recently and I got there early and I wasn't feeling it. And I was like, oh, I really want to turn around and go home. And oftentimes I tell people that they don't have to push themselves to do everything, and they can choose, you know, not to go to some things. So I was at this event and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to give it a little bit longer. And that's what I talk about is just, you know, you don't have to stay to the end of the night, but just give it a little bit longer. And I did. And then I ended up running into people that I had known and remembered hearing me speak like 5 years earlier.
Yes.
And funny thing is, right after we get off, I have a call with somebody I met at that event. And I keep thinking.
Well, there you go.
We're about to close a deal. And I keep thinking about the fact I could have walked out. And I, just by giving ourselves that little extra push and that little extra stretch, some great things can happen.
It's wonderful. You know, there's a psychologist named Wiseman that did studies on luck. He said that people can actually increase their luck. And one of the ways is to be open to new experiences, to be open to meeting people. Like if you're waiting in line in a movie theater, you can even talk to someone. They might be a great contact or some information that you learn. And then people who had bad luck say, no, I'm not going to bother talking to them. I'm not going to waste my time. So a lot of it is optimism, too, like, you know, being open to something good that can happen. And also, Michelle, the other one you talked about is conscientiousness. And that is It reminds me of, you may have heard of Don Miguel Ruiz's book, Be Impeccable with Your Word. So when you say something, you do it. But at the same time, you don't want to overcommit, because I think that happens to people too, right? They say yes too much and then they have a problem. Yeah. So what do we do about that?
That's why in this chapter, I talk about having boundaries and understanding how to say no and how to say yes, and that they're really not one word answers. Ah. And my husband actually put a sticky note on my computer and it simply just said no. And it was the idea of giving yourself, I will tell you, it was, I never took it down until the sticky fell off, because it was a way of reminding ourselves that we're allowed to say no and give ourselves permission to say no.
But is he saying no to you or saying no in general?
No, he was trying to encourage me to say no more often.
Oh, you to say no. Okay, but not say no to you. Like, if you want to go out somewhere, you don't want him to say no to
no.
you.
No. No.
That's interesting. But the other part of this, Michelle, I think is what we'll call follow through. And if you recall, last time I asked you about that and we were running out of time, you said, wait till my next book comes out. Because I'm not really good at follow through. I mean, I can meet people all the time, but I don't call them or follow through. So how do we get into a great follow through pattern? And that's very important, isn't it? The follow through.
Yes. I mean, your idea is to move from conversation to connection, and you're not going to do that unless you look for the next point of contact. And so what I would tell you is, in that initial conversation, I want you to kind of discover and almost be on a scavenger hunt for what's my follow-up. And that follow-up might simply be connecting to them on some social media platform. That follow-up might be setting up a coffee. That follow-up might be sharing that piece of information. So just think about what you've decided that follow-up to be, and then actually write the follow-up on the back of their card so that you can have that easy reminder.
That's great. So follow through and make it a visible reminder of what you want to do, and then do it. Also, I think the last mindset is the generous spirit. Now, I have something I call the reverse birthday. On my birthday, I actually give gifts, and I enjoy doing that, you know, because of a feeling of joy and gratitude. And you also talk about making introductions, you know, helping other people meet others. So tell us about that. Why is it so important to help people connect with each other and be generous?
That is the epitome of a connector, is somebody who enjoys and gets actually personal satisfaction of connecting two people for their mutual benefit, but not to necessarily any benefit of yours. And so that is one of the greatest gifts we can give somebody, is a connection.
That sounds great. And then you also say something like, but don't be a zealous connector. Does that mean someone that gives too much and they don't know how to stop giving?
That doesn't sound like something I would say.
Are you serious? Really? It says zealous. I don't know what you meant by that. Zealous. Said avoid being a zealous connector. It's one of your points there. Is that someone? I think you said like having boundaries or something. Like if you give too much, people don't return back. At some point, you need to pull back.
No, that definitely does not sound like something I would say.
Are you sure? Did I read a different book or no?
But I do think that when we talk about having a generous spirit, I do talk about it being generous with yourself as well. And what you might be alluding to is where I talk about ensuring that you have enough time for you, that you don't stretch yourself so thin that you can't be good to you too.
I see what you're saying. And then finally, Michelle, you talk about, I call it a connecting dream team, where you have people that are like different things like champions, cheerleaders, mentors, all that can support. Now, how do we find those people? I know you mentioned something like BNI, a networking group, or are there places we can go, or how do we create this great dream team of supporters?
So right at the end of the book, I actually give a worksheet for people to kind of map out. The truth is, you probably have a lot of these people in your life already. You just haven't really matched what they do for you to a title. And so I would actually start within the network that you have, within the organization that you're in, within the communities and the volunteer groups that you're part of, and recognize that you probably have a lot of these roles already. You can keep them informal, you can formalize, and then you can look to fill the gaps.
Fantastic. And I'm going to ask you a connecting question, Michelle, since I'm going to apply what you're teaching me. Do you know anyone that could be on Love University? Anyone that could be a great guest?
Actually, yes, because when you were talking earlier, I actually thought of somebody immediately because you started talking about empathy.
Yes.
And Maria Ross is finishing a book called The Empathy Edge right now. And I think she would make a great guest for you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, Michelle, I've been wanting to have you on the show. And I want to encourage everyone to get a hold of Michelle. Where can they learn more about your book, your website, and everything else?
I would love to hear from your listeners. And the best way to find me is just to go to my website, which is Michelle with two L's, Tillis, T-I-L-L-I-S, Lederman, L-E-D-E-R-M-A-N.com. From there, you can find my blog, my YouTube channel with my success shorty videos. You can link into me. You can find my Facebook page. And if you want to learn about the book, just go to theconnectorsadvantage.com. I have some specials on there. I call it a BOGO, which is a buy one, gift one.
Oh.
And when you give the gift of a book of connection,
yes,
I give you free chapters from other books, discounts, assessments,
wow,
a free training with Jordan Harbinger. Like, there's a bunch of giveaways.
Wow.
You can find them all on theconnectorsadvantage.com.
That's incredible. So I want to encourage my listeners to really go to her website. You know, Connectors is an amazing idea, and it really fits with our mission here, Love University, to help eradicate loneliness throughout the world. It's one of the biggest illnesses in humanity. And we love having you on the show. We'd love to have you back again at some point. And maybe we could even do a one day, or, you know, maybe some kind of conference on this kind of idea of connecting and eliminating loneliness.
I love it. Thank you so much for having me back.
Exactly. So Love University students, this is Dr. Alex Avila. So we encourage you to connect with each other this week and find people you haven't talked to in a long time and be a loving person. We're going to be at the LA Times Festival of Books, April 13th to 14th from 12 to 4 at USC. We'll be at booth 968 here in LA, California. We'd love to have you come by. We're going to have a live podcast and we're going to help people connect. It's going to be a wonderful day. If you have any questions, you can email us at lovetype4u@AOL.com. It's LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U at AOL. Call us at 310-226-8090. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Until next time, Love University students, put away your notepads, your books, your pens, and we'll see you next time.